a lot of people have heightened sense of awareness, and it's a great, great blessing, and it's utterly necessary for our art to be able to create in any sort of functioning manner, and hopefully something good happens. But it's edgy and a little bit dangerous too, because we're so sensitive, you know, that we have to be careful where we go, what we do, and how we do it. You know, tread lightly, as the ancients say.
Jesse Dermody is one of those guys you meet and you sort of feel like he's lived on the planet forever. He's a poet. He's a percussionist. He writes the lyrics for the band he and his brother Ryan founded called The Brothers Burn Mountain. Jesse Dermody is also a sculptor. His exhibit called Strange Forms consists of large-scale, dynamic, sculptural creatures that he has loved into being by combining elements that he has gathered on walks in the woods. In Jesse's artist statement, he says, "I sculpt poems, compose sculptures, and help my brother paint songs. I see no barriers between the forms or my senses. They're really all one art form. One tree sharing roots with our ancestors, with poem branches, song branches, and sculpture branches growing out. A composite of sensations with rustling leaves." Let's talk about the art at the McCrosty.
Yeah.
So where this is radio, mm-hmm. How would you describe that to somebody who can't see it?
usually I call them my monsters, and they're benevolent monsters who care. and they would like to give you a feeling of inner wealth. You know, they're not scary guys or girls. They're monsters who would like to help you heal. I go on daily hikes, and there are treasures everywhere. You know, there are animal bones, roots of strange forms, driftwood in waterways, stones that look marvelous and would like to be a part of things. And I just usually carry a bag and a rope with me wherever I go every day and pick things up, little treasures, and bring them back. And I have big piles in the barn, I walk by them every day and see what I can use, see what beckons me.
I kind of envisioned piles. Piles of treasures. How do the monsters appear?
generally, there's an impetus. Some piece that might be big or might be small that I really like. And it's no good the way it is. I mean, it's only so interesting just by itself. But I really like it, and I'll stand it up against the barn door or one of the walls of the horse stall or something. And I'll just leave it there for weeks or months, and I'll walk by it every day. And I'll have a whole bunch all over the place like this spread out. And it might seem like kind of a mess, but it's not, because I know where everything is. And one day, it almost exclusively happens from my furthest most peripheral vision. I'll be walking by something and I forget about it. You know, I'll have forgotten about it for weeks, and I'll keep on walking by it. And then in the furthest most periphery of my vision, boom, I have to be paying attention, and boom, I'll see it the way it's supposed to be. And it looks nothing the way it is right now. And I don't know how it could possibly, the vision for the being or the creature or the sculpture, I don't know how it could possibly come from this misshapen piece of root, but it does. And I just have to, you know, quickly memorize whatever has been given to me in my periphery. And I have to work very quickly and make sure that the image that was in my periphery is brought into the center. And from there, I work. I make sure that that image is burned, you know, three-dimensionally burned into my psyche, and I can work from there, and I can't wait. And everything else is put on hold. And my poor friends, my poor girlfriend, they have to wait and wait and wait. And, you know, I work until I can't work anymore. And then I wake up the next morning and I have to be very careful how I live, because that vision is very delicate and it could be destroyed very easily by my own, you know, mistakes or incompetence. So if I know how to handle it, I'm okay. And I can work day after day, you know, until the ghost of the vision has had the flesh put into it in the real world. They're created from a sense of love, a sense of thrill, a sense of joy, and some deeper drive, some deeper purpose that comes from my core. It's fiery. And I don't know, you know, exactly where the fire comes from, but it drives me. And I have to keep up with the inspirations, or, you know, I'll go stale and I'll be a much less useful person to, you know, the small part that I play in our culture. I just try and keep up with the fire.
So is this the way you've always been, taken over by the creative?
Yeah. Since I was in my late teens, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. The creative, existence. I mean, it's easy to get addicted to that thrill. Even if I'm, or anybody is creating a lousy piece of artwork, it still has value to me as the person creating it, because I'm getting a thrill from it. And it, some way, somehow, it still has healing power for me, even if it doesn't have that much healing power for other people. So it's just, my motto is to work, create, and keep it going all day long, every day. Because I don't know, I'm a person who needs a lot of healing, you know, and it heals me. So that's my mindset when I'm working every day.
I'm talking with Jesse Dermody. We're talking about his large-scale sculptures that he creates from all kinds of different things, animal skulls and driftwood and gnarled roots, all kinds of gifts from the woods. He's an artist in the truest sense. He's a visual artist, he's a musician, he's a poet, and he's a sculptor. His current exhibit is called Strange Forms, and it's on show at the McCroskey Art Center in Grand Rapids. Jesse, you were just talking about getting completely taken over by inspiration when you are creating what you call the monsters, these loving, caring, healing monsters. In your artist statement, you say, I sculpt poems, compose sculptures, and help my brother paint songs. You say, I see no barriers between the forms or my senses. How does that work when you are sculpting or creating these monsters, giving them life? Do lyrics come to you for songs while that's happening?
Yeah, sometimes they do. They do. I always carry around a pocket notebook and two pens with black ink, because I don't know when a poem might occur. They're occurrences, you know, like storm systems are occurrences. They happen, and words will rain down when they want to rain down. And if I'm ready for them with my pocket notebook and pen, all the better. And it's wonderful. I think I'd be a less content person if I just stuck to one art form, even though it can become overwhelming, because I can be sculpting and then I get stuck on something, and then I can walk away and I can work on a poem instead, or I can work on a song my brother and I are working on together. Mm-hmm. I don't like to limit my way of thinking. I mean, I already have so many limitations that I'm butting up against all the time. Why limit sculpting to just sculpting, you know, or just visual? It's so much less rewarding than including all the senses. I mean, why can't I, if I hear, for instance, a black crow cawing in the distance outside the barn during sunset, and the next door neighbor has just mowed his field and there's the savor of the fresh mowed hay, why can't I incorporate those sensations into the visual? and make that curve. Oh, you know, a thought comes to mind right now. When I was young, I was about 20, and I was in southern France. I had hiked many miles. I was with a friend at the time. And we came upon this mountain village in the Luberon Mountains. And it's really self-contained still, where it hasn't sprawled at all because of the laws, the strict laws they have. It's in a national forest. And in the village, it's a cobblestone street and only stone and mortar centuries-old buildings. And there's this old, very small, smallish window with very thick walls. And there was a small sculpture in the window. And I was amazed by its roughness and how shaggy it was and how imperfect. And I really hadn't done too much sculpting yet, a little bit, dabbling at that time. I had really gotten into poetry and was really getting into music as well at that time. But I saw this sculpture, and I was staring at it. I just stopped in my tracks in the cobblestone street, and I was looking at it. It was midday, kind of a cloudy day, and it was summer and hot. And the drapes were closed in the window behind the sculpture. It was resting on the window ledge. And I suddenly see this old guy with a big white beard. He pulled the drapes aside like this and peeked his head out there and looked at me and kind of cocked his head and quick closed the drapes. And 2 seconds later, he must have run to the front door, and he said, "Hi there, young man. Are you looking at the sculpture in the window?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you like the sculpture that you're looking at in the window?" He was speaking in French with some, like, a Norwegian accent. And so I had to really listen to him to understand him. And I said, "Yeah, I love it. What, you know, who did that?" And he said, "Well, I did that. I'm a sculptor. I'm a professional sculptor." And he said, "If you like that one, would you like to see other ones?" And he invited me into his studio, which was in a different part of the building, a little further down the hill. And he opened up the door, and it wasn't that well lit. He turned on the lights, and it became much more well lit. And I walked in from the bright gray day. It was hot, and it was much cooler inside. And there were just hundreds of sculptures, jam-packed, all different sizes, some of them smallish, some of them large, and they were just the ugliest, most beautiful things I've ever seen. I mean, because they were ugly like a burl on an oak tree. But, you know, that what it emoted in me was beautiful. So I thought they were extremely beautiful. And I said, "Wow, do you mind if I, like, touch them?" And he said, "Well, be careful. They're kind of fragile." And I looked all around, and he said, "See those ones over there? I just took those back from the Louvre because I had an exhibition, and it was supposed to be of Noah's Ark and all the different animals. And, you know, I never saw a giraffe look less like a giraffe, but evoke the feeling of a giraffe more than his giraffes did." And it really, looking back, I had forgotten about it for several years, for like a decade. And then it, like, oh, this guy really influenced me by inviting me in. He saw that I loved his work, and he wasn't being egotistical. He just wanted to invite me in. And, oh, this young man, you know, this is a part of my responsibility to allow him to see my work. It was like a really generous, healing offer of an elder to me. I forgot his name. I don't even know his name. I remember, you know, the village was Lacoste. That's where Le Comte du Sade had his castle that's now in ruin. The old man, he was talking to me, and he wanted to, I was asking him, you know, how do you do this? And he said, "Well, at a young age, I figured, why can't an arm be a river? And why can't the chest be a mountain range?" And that's a mixing of senses too, and a mixing of the inner and outer worlds. That's so important to making artwork that sticks. And it took about 45 minutes, and it influenced a lifetime, you know?
That's Jesse Dermody. You can see his sculptures at the McCroskey Art Center in Grand Rapids. His show is called Strange Forms. It's a collection of large-scale abstract creations, creatures actually, each with a unique personality emerging from its fascinating mix of bones and branches and stones and a variety of other gifts of the forest. If you can't make it to the McCroskey yourself, You can see Jesse's work by visiting the McCrosty website, and that is mccrostyartcenter.org. This is Area Voices. I'm Katie Carter. Thanks for listening. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota. In addition to being a sculptor, Jesse and his brother Ryan make up the band The Brothers Burn Mountain. Here's their song, Lord of Night.
Thank you. rise with the sky.